Welcome to the first part of Making Things Public on Radio Worm. I'm here with Alex.
And I'm here with your son.
We are your hosts for today's show that will be on air from 8 to 9 p.m. And this is an introduction, maybe 1 week almost, or actually even less, to our graduation show. We are part of this year's graduates of the Experimental Publishing Group from the Pietzwart Masters, or experimental publishing, like we call it nowadays.
We're gonna have a sneak peek inside some of the projects that the graduation students at experimental publishing have been working during the last year. We will hear some interviews about those projects and the working process and the research. We will hear some sonic creations and outputs from some of those projects and research, as well as conversations between our classmates about what they've been working. And also we have invented this funny experiment to introduce some projects through infomercials or commercials. So you're gonna have an hour of listening to those sonic pieces created by our group.
So please stay tuned. Remember, the opening of our show is on the 29th of June at 6 p.m. at Slash Gallery in Worm.
Enjoy the show, and we're gonna air tonight, but also come again at Radio Worm on the 27th of June at 7 p.m.
Thank you for listening. How to make your server run 4x faster.
Okay, let's go.
Open your terminal and enter the following command.
curl-o-https://project.xhub.nl/how-to-make-your-server-run-4x-faster-x.stl.
This will save an
.stl
file with 4x legs in your working directory. If you don't want to bother opening the command line, you can just click on this
link.
With this file, you can 3D print the two pairs of legs and install them on your server. In order to do so, you need to generate some
g-code
from the
STL
file. There are multiple ways of doing that, depending on the kind of printer you have access to. Check your local makerspace and ask them.
Although it's not mandatory, it's suggested to turn off, unplug and let the machine cool down before the upgrade.
Usually, servers don't like to be wobbled around while they are working on some important process. Beware that there is the risk of losing precious data. Approach this operation with the same care and precautions of a surgery intervent.
Note! Remember to adjust the size of the 3D printed file to fit with the dimensions of your server. This guide is tailored to a small self-hosted Raspberry Pi 4. If your server is running on a different piece of hardware, things could need an adjustment. However, it's not in the scope of this documentation to cover all possible cases. If you are not sure about the exact proportions, you can search online. How wide, tall, and deep is my server? And why? And why? And why? And divide the result by 4. One for leg.
Once you install the legs, a reboot could be necessary.
Sudo shutdown-r.
If the server restarts without strange error messages, congratulations! Keep in mind that it will need a bit of time to learn how to walk while catwalking, so the increase of performance will not be
instantaneous.
Give it some moments to warm up, and before you notice, it will run 4x faster.
Warning! Although 4 additional legs grant way more speed, they come with a compromise on stability. Sadly, the server has 4 grounding points to manage, and its center of mass is higher than before. This could cause some
balance issues and less grip onto surfaces.
It's also worth mentioning that a server with legs doesn't really appreciate being caged in a rack, let alone in overcrowded units.
Listening to Making Things Public on Radio Worm.
We just listened to Reversed Words, collective sound piece that was made by 7 contributors. And then after I got the contributions, I edited and mixed it. So the invitation was to think of words that we would like to either take back, like if something we said and regretted saying, or to be taken back, like when someone told us something hurtful. And this experiment was a sound jam done online because I wanted to test if we can also make it remotely.
Today, Alex asked me that we talk about her project, which will be at our Making Things Public show very soon. Can you tell us more about that?
My project is titled at the moment Sound Jams, which is a very broad term for my understanding of facilitated collective making moments of sound-based publications. And with this project, I was trying out different ways to create this process and structure for people to come, maybe in the same place, or maybe remotely, or maybe within a week or two long workshops.
Mm-hmm. Can you take an example, maybe?
So together with Naomi, we facilitated a two-week workshop. During the first week, we introduced sound as a way to talk about your work, but also experiment. And during the second week, I facilitated this whole process of creating a sound publication as a group. So they had to split in different groups and go through the process of being contributors at first and make their own pieces individually or in smaller groups. And then in the second part of the process, they switched into different caretaking groups. So each group could take care of different part of the final edit and publishing of the sound piece.
You will hear the final piece made and mixed by the bachelor students who attended the elective class after this interview. It's called Transverse Atlantis, and they also made a sound installation at the stairs at Willem de Koning Academy by creating different levels of the ocean once you go up and down the floors.
You are listening to Making Things Black on Radio Horn.
What was, because you said there was five sound jams, what was the most exciting thing that happened to one of these sound jams? As that can mean anything, that can mean something that surprised you, something that you didn't expect, something that went perfectly like you imagined it to happen.
It's very personal, mm-hmm. because of course I did these sound jams to try out creating spaces for making for other people. But also I was really happy to be a participant in some of those jams. And the moment when I realized that actually I can use sound and even some ambient approach to creating sound and music was really liberating for me. And yeah, I think that's my highlight, because I always wanted to create sonic pieces, but I was always too shy or insecure. And now I am starting to do that more and more, and for me that's amazing. And this is what I also want to inspire in other people who are not coming from musical training or sound artists, who are still insecure into using this medium. It's much more accessible than they think.
Mm. Nice. What did you think people would take out of those sound jams? Because there's a lot of your personal input and what you are looking into that, and now you made very clear what you got from it. What do you think others got from it? Or what did people tell you they got from it?
Yeah. For some people, it was a similar liberation that I experienced. No matter what their background was, after a sound jam, some of them really said, oh, this is, I'm going to do things in a new way using sound from now on. For instance, some of them had some musical training before, and that gives a lot of constraint in the way they approach a musical instrument, for instance. And now this musical instrument can be disrupted and used in a different way. And for others, sound was a completely new medium, and in the beginning it feels very awkward or scary to access it and use it and create sound when you just really have no idea what to do. So this structure in which you have a space or a row or a prompt to start using sound is something that you can take to your practice, and some people clearly said that that might be really helpful for them in the future.
Nice. And what? How are you gonna now invite people that didn't participate to the sound jams during the show?
they are invited to get inspired by the creations of the five gems, so they will be able to hear them. But also there is a publication that they can buy at the graduation shop.
Mm-hmm.
And this publication actually will also have some prompts inside. How did I do the gems? What instructions did I give to the people? That will be inside the publication. And also it will be annotated so they could also see what actually happened in my case and what went wrong. Because of course there were moments of things that didn't go according to the plan. And that's amazing because then you have so much more new input and interesting realizations that in reality some things could work better in a different way.
I think your project doesn't necessarily go for the would you do anything different question.
Of course I'm gonna do some things differently. For instance, when I did the first sound jam, the first experiment was people in the room doing a jamming session. And I am so insecure in doing that because I don't have a musical training. And jam session is really something that you right away connect with a musical jamming session. What we did was really, we really brought people who didn't have that. Like maybe one or two or three people in the group had experience with music, but the rest of the group, which was 11 people, did not. And it was easy for the people who had a musical background, and it was really not easy for the ones who didn't. And this jam, its purpose was to give different sound making objects, so it's clear that we were not there to make music in this traditional way you understand music, but in a different way. But still, you are in this circle for the first time, you've never used sound before, and you of course you feel awkward being in this setting. So this first tryout, I would totally do it in a different way in terms of creating better space, better introduction to the people who are there to understand this is not a music making experience, and maybe do a little tryout before we jump into this making. But also the jam had a different idea. It was really to try make sound in the context of Pauline Olivero's practice, that you listen to something and then you respond. So the focus of this jam was not exactly the instruments. It was about how you respond to the person to your right side. With what?
Nice. Thank you.
Thanks for your help and support.
Of course, always. Thank you for the sound jams. You're invited to listen to them starting 29th of... I was going to say September, of June, in the Slash Gallery. Our opening starts at 6, and the exhibition will run until the 2nd of July. So please come by to listen to some sounds and talk with Alex about those really nice sessions. Thank you. Modular matter. Rewire your prints. Are you tired of your usual desktop publishing setup and need to switch things up? Then this modular tool is for you. Combine the new hardware modules Dynamic Glyph, Friction Level, Whoosh, Future Relics Weaver, and Emergent Matter to create unexpected and exciting print results. Modular matter. Rewire your prints.
Should we say something about what we're listening to right now?
Yes. Try to explain.
Okay, so there are jumper wires. There's a breadboard. No, there are two breadboards.
There's a battery.
And
a slide potentiometer. Mm-hmm. And a rotary potentiometer. And a buzzer. That is the part that creates the sound, right? Mm-hmm.
And these squeaky sounds are...
Yeah, when do they appear?
So whenever the jumper cable comes into contact with the breadboard.
It's so nice to watch this back, oh my god. This is where we started. It's been 1 year. Oh my god. And the weather was nice back then, as we can see in the video.
So
and now we're sitting on the balcony in the sun. Isn't that great? Yeah, that's where the whole journey with the electronics started. Mm-hmm. At least for me. You started before, right?
A bit, but then like still, it's like we're learning together and this was like a really nice moment to...
Yeah, super, super low-key start. Yeah. Low-tech.
Mm-hmm.
So, really just us trying to make a sound with a battery and some jumper wires.
Yep. So stripping away, like, all the complicated, like, fancy, I don't know. Yeah, like, just to really understand how electronics work, really. And, like, how, like, this, even with the simplest materials, you can... create something totally exciting with it too.
How is this present in your graduation project? You kept this mindset of the low-tech right? And also the fascination for the electronics?
Yeah, like that's something that I can't, like, it's always been there and there's something there that I really wanted to, like, continue exploring and, yeah, that became, like, my, like, the key constraint or factor in the project.
Can you try to explain how or why you're more interested in keeping it low-tech than trying to build something super complex and advanced?
Yeah, I think it's because, like, because in the past, like, how I've learned electronics is always through these, like, DIY soldering kits. And there's something about those, like, there's something about learning through those tools that really, like, there's a joy in them, but at the same time, like, I'm super frustrated by them.
A kit would be just a collection of components and then some instructions on how you connect these components to come up with something super fancy, basically, right?
Yes.
And what is the frustration in this?
It would be, like, so, it would be, like, okay, I'm really excited, like, I'm in the process of building it, and then there's always something that goes wrong in the process, so, like, either components don't work, like, my soldering skills aren't that great, like, something breaks, and then I don't know how to fix it, like, I can't get help somehow, so there's always, like, this really frustrating, I feel like I just hit a wall.
Yes.
And, and then, like, sometimes, like, I manage to overcome these, like, struggles, but then sometimes I don't, but then at the end of the day, like, I either end up with a project that's finished and not working, or finished and working, but then I'm like, okay, what's next? Like, I build another thing, and then I repeat this process all over again, so it's like this cycle of like building things that work or don't work, and at the same time, I'm like, I'm still not really understanding how electronics work.
Yeah,
it always goes back to that.
So for these kids, you have a fascination, but also a lot of frustration,
yes.
I guess.
And I think these two work, actually complement each other super well. And I feel like you can't really do one without the other.
Yes.
And that's, yeah, like, I think that's, like, the beauty of it, even, like, in electronics, I guess. Or that's how I see it.
And, I mean, this approach with the DIY kits, how are you counteracting this in your grad project? Because you, it could be looked at in this way, I think.
By counteracting, you mean?
You mean you're somehow playing with the idea of a kit, but then not really. You're turning it upside down somehow.
Yeah.
Because you don't have a collection of super advanced components that you have to combine in a specific way and then come up with this final outcome.
Yep.
But it's a very different approach. Could you try to explain that?
Yeah, so like what I wanted to try is like basically kind of create like another version of a kit where you can actually like spend time like really just enjoying the process without feeling so rushed or so like your skills are going to be measured somehow by the end product. And I really wanted to make this about just really just making mistakes and seeing what comes out of these, like, okay, like, your soldering skills aren't that great, but then you somehow end up, like, creating, like, a short circuit, and then that produced, like, a sound that you never thought would be possible if you actually did, like, a perfect, like, you followed the instructions perfectly, and then you end up with the kid. Just creating this moment of, like, really highlighting this process of making and just the process itself and giving value to, like, the components, like, really having time to really understand what this one resistor does as opposed to, like, okay, like, you just have to solder everything together and then, you know, like, so it's more like just trying to just slow everything down and giving yourself the time and space that you need to in order to understand something that's so complex and that's like not within your like not part of your daily practice or like something you do all the time, you know?
Yes, and instead of having like super specific instructions on how to connect the components, you started to write those letters, right
yeah,
which is also a very interesting way to invite people in, because of what are you sharing in these letters?
Yeah, so initially, like, I started writing these because I feel like I'm always, like, alone in this process somehow, and I kind of wanted to find a way to, I don't know, like, keep making and, like, support or be my, I don't know how to describe this, like, to keep myself going and to motivate myself. So this form of writing kind of, like, actually really helped me, it's like it really helped me, motivate me to just continue making, but also to understand my own process through this writing, this like just a letter to myself or an imaginary audience.
Because aren't you, I mean, I haven't read all the letters yet, but aren't you also sharing your own frustrations and learnings and happy accidents?
Right. That's like the key part of the letter, actually. All these frustrations and discoveries rather than instructions on like, okay, how are you gonna put them? So yeah, like basically the project would be like you would receive a letter that would come with a component also, and then you kind of like, okay, like I'll share like my take on it and then try to provide, you know, like invite others to join in and just to understand components without this expectation to build a project.
Yes.
In the end.
Yes.
Yeah. So it's like a low key like entry point, kind of.
And experience. How is this metaphor of the cross training important in your approach? Because I think that's a very interesting take on electronics, but also even more in general creative practice.
Because I initially, like, so I started with, like, my graphic design practice, and I found that, like, so I was basically really frustrated with being stuck behind, like, a keyboard and a mouse. And I wanted to find a way to kind of break through that, and that's how I found myself in studying electronics somehow, just by, like, studying how, like, okay, how do buttons work? Like, really stripping it down to the basics. And,
the cross-training.
Oh, yeah,
like,
right.
Like, how,
yeah.
How, yeah.
Yeah.
I think the pragmatic question would be, how does graphic design connect to electronics?
Right.
But then I know that you talk a lot about this idea of the cross-training that you can implement in your creative process.
Yes. Yeah, so
and this is basically what you're doing, but you are also writing about it, right?
Yeah.
So what can you explain this cross-training method and how you would approach this in apply this in your creative work?
So with cross-training, it's basically, so I'm thinking of it as, okay, if you're a graphic designer, your main sport of focus, or as an athlete, like, you're basically like an athlete,
yes,
and your main sport of focus would be to do graphic design.
Yes.
And I was thinking, okay, like, if you want to cross-train, if you want to practice other muscles that you also have, and then, like, in other fields or disciplines that are not related to graphic design, so, like, not web design, not, like, yeah, these, like, things that you would expect to come with, like, this package of being a graphic designer, like, what would that be? And that's why, like, I found that, like, for example, with soldering, the skills that you need to, like, the precision and how still your hands have to be, like, for example, as I was doing this, like, I was like, wait, this is very similar to, like, when I'm trying to align, like, pixels in the computer, for example, through the screen. And so it's things like this one, it's like there's no direct correlation to the practice, but then it's more like, okay, the act of doing things and things that don't seem related, like, from, I don't know, the surface, I don't know how to describe this exactly, but then, like, you just immerse yourself in these, like, various, like, different acts of making, and then they all come back, like, they all connect somehow in the end. Like, just taking things apart, putting them back together, like, how can you apply that in graphic design, for example, which is something that you don't really get to do through.
Yes.
Yeah, so this more, like, indirect kind of approach, and being immersed in the process, and yeah. Does that
yes. Yes, totally. No, I think it's really this idea of mixing disciplines, and while focusing on one discipline, you automatically learn something that you can later on, or that could potentially later on be useful in the other discipline.
Yeah.
So it's really trying to not focus too much on one specific muscle, as you said,
exactly.
But really trying to explore all of them and kind of observing also how it comes back in a different moment where you didn't expect it, probably.
Perfectly said.
Yeah, it's interesting. I think there are many moments where our projects connect, but also our general approach.
Yeah.
Because I'm also coming from this graphic design background, and now, since last year, since this one moment here where we experimented with the breadboard circuit, I'm also really interested in electronics, and I'm trying to find ways to combine it.
Yes. So how is it going so far? Like,
it's going great.
Yeah.
It's also a bit out of hand, but in a good way. I've learned a lot, I think. But for me, I didn't... Yeah, at some point I was just so excited about the electronics that I couldn't stick to the low-tech version. I needed to go further and explore what possibilities lay ahead. And that can be very overwhelming sometimes, but also on the way I learned a lot. Yeah.
So, like, do you want to share maybe some things that, okay, maybe, like, okay, what was the key thing that, like, really
So where do I start? So I just found myself being fascinated by electronics and all kinds of technical devices. I was never so interested before I came to Rotterdam, but I think that's because I was always kind of outside of the black box, not knowing what happens behind the surface of a technical instrument or device. And once I had an idea what is behind, I had this urge to understand and try and find ways to use it for myself.
Mm.
And then I was just really fascinated by Eurorecs and modular synthesizers, even though my practice doesn't connect to sound at all. So it was not really about generating sound and experimenting with that, but more this whole infrastructure of the modular synthesizer that was fascinating to me. And then I had this moment where I thought, couldn't I make a modular synthesizer that is not used for sound processing, but for print design?
Amazing.
So that is the basic idea. And yeah, in that sense, it connects to your approach, because I'm trying to use a very familiar system, the one of the modular synthesis, but then I'm applying it to a completely different discipline. So I'm basically trying to build my own modular synthesizer, meaning like actual hardware modules that have all these electronic components, but then also software running on microcontrollers to somehow control these components or use the values they generate to process text and images to, in the end, finally create printed outcome.
That's amazing. I mean, that's already like you're already inviting graphic designers to leave their usual setup of like a desktop screen, computer, mouse,
yes,
keyboard, already to like experiment with something that, I don't know, maybe they have never had the chance to.
Yes, for me, it really started with a fascination for the electronic parts, but like while working on this project, I realized how this is a very important, or could potentially be a very important moment in a graphic designer's practice, when you finally leave the desktop and leave all the software that you normally use and all the control devices that you normally use and switch them for something else, because then you, all of a sudden, you're completely unfamiliar with the tools and you have to learn them from scratch, and maybe they are even a bit clunky and hard to control, so you cannot be as precise as you would normally be, maybe. And then I'm just convinced that these moments bring some failures, but also happy accidents that would never emerge when you stick to your usual setup.
Which is so important, and which is what I find, like, that's always, like, I'm always missing that in this whole, I don't know, especially, like, in graphic design, I always feel this pressure to be like super precise and like no clunky, no like awkward kind of moments, but this sounds like the perfect tool to really break out of that.
Yes, let's hope it will work in the end.
Well,
but the nice idea about the modular synthesizer is that you can start with just like a handful of modules, but then it can be extended by adding more and more modules. So I'm guessing this will be a project that will live on also. Mm-hmm. And I'm sometimes dreaming about at some point inviting other makers in to add their own ideas for new modules, or even like actually making modules themselves to connect them to the system. And I think that would be super
nice. Really nice. Wait, but can you also like tell us more about your modules? because you're building several.
Yes, I mean, I can try to explain the types of modules maybe, to not go into too much detail, but the idea is that you have one output module that generates the print, which is of course important when you want to produce printed matter. And that module also connects to a screen just to have a preview before you send it to the printer. And then there's one input module, which is my take on a keyboard. So you wouldn't use your usual keyboard to type text, but you would use this module that has a rotary knob where you can pick letters from the alphabet and add them to a text. And then in between, there are several modules which I call transform modules, because they use the text input from the keyboard module and then somehow work with this text. And some of the modules focus on text processing, so they actually work with the text itself and generate a new output text. But then there are also some modules which focus a bit more on the styling of the text. For example, you can choose the font size and or the font and the font size. And you can choose a position on the page and maybe a rotation of the text and stuff like that. Yeah, and then there are also some modules that try to... Initially, I imagined that I could also add some drawing modules or image processing modules, but that's a whole different approach. So I stick with the text, but I'm trying to transform the styling of a text so that the outcome would actually look like an image. For example, I start to weave text to generate something that is just a visual pattern. And then I play with the outline of the text and the gray tone of the text and stuff like that. Yeah.
Super nice. And can you tell us more a bit about the patterns? Like, because you mentioned that you have these visual patterns that you're grading.
Yeah, this is something that also started in a project we did together. Yes. In a workshop where we had this very simple code that would weave two texts together, and then we would have this hardware interface where you had several patch cables to define a specific pattern for this weaving function, let's say. And yeah, this was an important moment for me because I realized how this physical interaction with the interface actually makes you understand what is happening in the technical operation, which is normally very hidden.
Yes.
And so this is an idea that shows in all my modules that I'm trying to find physical interfaces that somehow match the actual operation that is happening.
That's really nice.
And yeah.
Yeah, because I find that that tends to be, people don't really... I mean, this is based on the kits that I've been building. There's always this hidden, it's not, the process isn't shown. And then what I find really nice about your modules is that you're really showing, there's no, black boxes. It's
No, it's literally the printed circuit boards and then the adjustable components directly on this board, and you can see everything.
Yeah.
And of course, what you cannot see is the code that is running on the microcontrollers. But I'm trying my best to find a physical interface that somehow resembles or gives you an idea as a user of what is happening in the code.
Yeah.
Thanks for this conversation.
Thank you.
1 year later.
Yes.
Let's meet again.
For
one
sure.
Year.
Yeah, and then should we see where we go with this.
Nice. Let's do it.
You are listening to Making Things Public on Radio Warner.
Dear Maker,
This is a letter that is being written and shared with the intention to bring out, reconnect with, and foster the forgotten, blocked, or hidden maker that already exists within you. It's a moment to tune in with your surroundings and acknowledge your own ways of seeing and doing things so that you can finally let your freak flag fly. Find out more at Making Things Public, the experimental publishing graduation show at Slash Gallery. The opening is on the 29th of June at 6 p.m. Thank you for listening to us. Remember that the next time we'll be online again will be on Tuesday, 27th of June at 7 p.m. And now, before we say goodnight, we would like to introduce you to our graduation show and what is the concept behind this title, Making Things Public.
Graduating students of the Experimental Publishing Master, XPUB, the Pietzwart Institute, invite you to Making Things Public in Slash Gallery, Rotterdam. A glimpse of a moment. We look at where it comes from, this bubble. Thinking about bubbles helps to reimagine publishing, or publishing. When we switch the first letter of public, publishing, and publication, something awkward happens that initiates a thought process. A small detail, a single letter, makes unfamiliar and curious again what we have learned to take for granted. Making Things Public is, amongst other things, a graduation shop and a space to continue conversations on how we sell and distribute published matter as independent makers. We are thinking about how to send out our bubbles. Our publishing has happened underwater. Throughout the past 2 years of collective study, we have experimented with and developed our works. This is a bubbling of our experience, an intimate and collective process that now travels up and out to an external public. A bubble is fragile and temporary. A bubble is created with care and consciousness. Or it emerges in a happy accident. A bubble is an imaginary intimate space. A bubble pops and spreads without a trace. A force brings us together as a group. This force will disappear, pop, like a bubble. We hope to remember its rainbows. That was a long day, huh, when we wrote this.
Yes. But it really made some nice conversations and thoughts about how do we publish, where does our work go after we part with it, and how does it reach out to people.
Yeah, it's really interesting how somehow this bubble metaphor emerged, and I think we all agreed that it wasn't necessarily directly connected to the bubble as a thing, but just this shift in language just enabled us to talk about it in a more, not necessarily detached, but taking a step back, we just had a better overview somehow of our work as a group, using that term.
Yes, and we'll be there at Slash Gallery to have these conversations with you as well, so please pass by, because we would love to talk about publishing and art and art school and what happens afterwards. So join us for some conversations and some nice moments. The opening is on 29th of June at 6 p.m. at Slash Gallery in Worm. We'll be here again on Tuesday.
We are
Gerson Schellings,
Gian Hake,
Cheong, Cheng Cheng, Kim,
Camo,
Kimberly Kusmila,
Erika Gargaglione,
Mitzo,
Emma Prato,
Sopisera Bura Pachaisi,
Aunik,
Miriam Schöb.